what happens when the worst case scenario hits, and it's stage 4 cancer. But you have financial freedom, which you can use to fight this on your terms. Welcome to Making Sense. It's the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee, supported by our friends at KiwiBank. I'm Frances Cook, a financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. Now, we often talk about money as a way to buy time, freedom, maybe even joy. But for today's guest, it's gone much deeper than that. When Carolyn Gordon was diagnosed with stage 4 bowel cancer, flipped her life upside down, as it would for any of us. But because she'd quietly built up her financial independence over the years, she also had choices. She's been able to self-fund medication with fewer side effects, travel overseas for surgeries that aren't available here, take time to focus on what actually matters instead of fighting with a system that really isn't built for flexibility. She's still on that journey. She's still fighting. But the role of financial freedom, not as a luxury, but as a life tool, has never been clearer. It's not about money for money's sake. It's about what money makes possible when life gets real. So let's get into it. Making Sense is on a mission to make money simple, and I just couldn't do that without the support of KiwiBank. It's really important to me to only work with companies that understand that mission. And for KiwiBank, their purpose is to help Kiwi and Aotearoa be better off. So bringing you real stories of different approaches to finance is one of the ways they're making a difference to the lives of their customers. This is making Kiwi better off. This is Kiwi. All right, and I'm joined now by Carolyn Gordon. I've got to say, you're someone who certainly has used financial independence in order to really take control of your life. So let's start with, when did you first hear about the financial independence movement, and what is financial independence to you?
About 20 years ago, there was actually a writer on there called Elizabeth Kerr. I'm not sure if she's around anymore, but she was writing a particular area in personal finance, and a lot of it was really the basic tenements, if you like, of the FIRE movement, which is, you know, create a gap, think about where your money's going. Not just the FIRE movement, but other writers such as the people who, it was a very famous book, which is Your Money or Your Life. I mean, it's that kind of idea about make sure it's not just being tight, it's being frugal and thinking about the value of what you purchase, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess part of that was reading that stuff. Possibly by default, inadvertently, my partner and I were a little bit like that anyway. What does it mean to me or us is most importantly the ability to have choice, right? I think that that's the key thing for a lot of people, that that's choice about work, you know, work optional. It's choice about what charities to support. It's choice about, to a certain extent, not stressing over an electricity bill that it's higher than normal, that kind of thing. And also, you know, supporting friends and family. So, yeah, that's kind of where I got started.
Oh, I'm so with you, especially when you say about getting those choices. I think that's what money always comes back to me, is that having the ability to make choices on your own terms, it almost always does take money. And when you take control of your money, you can really build something with that. I mean, I think another thing is a lot of people assume that this is for really rich people or people who've gone into these tech careers or whatever. I mean, what sort of levers did you need to pull to make it work?
Chose to work for a not-for-profit charitable trust. So, I mean, they're not known for paying well, you know. And they certainly, you know, it was okay. It was decent, but it was probably median wage or less, and we're a single-income family. So I think that to me it was more the mindset around thinking about value of stuff, basically. I think, to be fair, there was a large period of time that we were probably pretty frugal, you know. So, for example, we joined a play centre, we went to a toy library, You know, toy libraries, a classic thing. It's a fantastic resource. I don't know if they're all through New Zealand, but with a young child, as opposed to buying a whole lot of crap, which is A, environmentally, you know, just use and kind of, you know, throw it away. A toy library is an example of something that you can join for a nominal fee and use those resources for your child and then kind of give them back. And they don't get sick of them and all that jazz. So, I mean, that's an example of kind of all, you know, the same philosophy as the library. So there were those type of choices. We're on a single income, so I was working, my partner wasn't. We chose that, you know, because to have time, if you like, for our child. And in terms of inheritance, if you like, because that often is the transfer of wealth in New Zealand, we inherited from my mother or parents, and that would have been $15,000 or $20,000. So, I mean, you know, not a lot of money, right? So what I'm trying to kind of paint a picture of is that people say it's very much more difficult to do it now, but I still think ultimately a lot of this is down to mindset and choice. We had the worst car possibly in the street. We frequently went to op shops. We weren't doing a lot of travel at that stage. So therefore, I guess part of it is also trying to change the mindset that you use money to reward yourself when you should be thinking about, well, what's the reward that I want in the future? So, you know, it's like the Eagles song. You can spend all your time making money, or you can spend all your money making time, right? And the premise of the financial independence movement is really one to have the choice of how do I want to spend my time. And equally, if I have to be in a position that I can't work, which I'm sure we'll get on to, then I can take that time to not do whatever I want to do, or else I can leave a job that I don't agree with philosophically or whatever.
And we'll dive into those tactics a bit more in a minute, because I think that's something people will really want to know about, how you built this, how you use it. It's so important. But, you know, like you say, that ability to walk away from a job when it's not going well for whatever reason, you spend so much time at your job. That is a huge impact on how much you are enjoying your day-to-day life. But another thing you were able to do is you had a major health scare, right? What was it? And how did your financial resources help?
Just around the time of COVID, I was working in a management role. And that was pretty hectic, to be honest, because it was in health, kind of allied health, and it was around providing services for people. Started to feel unwell. Was really like, I'm a runner and a cyclist and everything else. Long story short, about 3 weeks later, diagnosed with bowel cancer. You know, and significant, not just kind of, oh, well, you've only got a little bit. It had already spread quite substantially. Stage 4 for those people who know about such fun things. The impact of that, I guess, was that obviously I had to take time off work. I had a very good employer. But, I mean, when you're going through a cancer journey, there's all these other things that, you know, there's your health, your emotional kind of thing, your reaction to your family. You feel like shit often if you're having treatment, to be blunt. And the other thing that you don't want to put in that mix necessarily is the fact that you're under significant financial pressure. So I actually continued to work for the next 2 years, 2.5 years, which was, again, probably more about bloody-mindedness and wanting to stay with that kind of, you know, the intellectual things that happen when you go to work, and also the kind of connection to a employer and all that, you know, all of that, those other things that work provides. However, I needed to have significant periods of time off because I had surgery and chemotherapy, and the chemotherapy, for anybody who goes through it, I mean, depending what it is, it can be deeply unpleasant, I might add. So that really, on a financial level, that wasn't a big deal, right? It wasn't like I was going, yahoo, I'm not having money coming in, but it was more, it doesn't mean, hey, Larry, that we have to eat the dog, you know? It's a joke, by the way, but he's feeling pretty assured about that at the moment. So it's just that is the last or one part of it. Now, stress and cancer and treatment are not a recipe for good, positive things. So there's a case in point that, and I've talked to other friends of mine who are still working, also swap jobs precisely for that reason, the whole thing of stress levels. You know, they have a huge impact on your health, particularly if you're going through treatment at a time. I mean, in the end, I just thought, I just don't need this anxiety. And I mean, my whether my treatment response is good because of the treatment or the whole setup of not having to go to a stressful job, not worrying anxiously about a phone call that I might get at 11 o'clock at night because something's happened. You know, I just don't have that all to deal with. So again, yeah, I think that that's a, you know, helpful position to be in. But one that, as I said, we've created. Yeah. I am at the moment on unfunded drugs in New Zealand, immunotherapy. Now, look, nobody loves giving money to drug companies or to private hospitals. I'm not in a position to, while I might have a policy view about or an advocacy role in terms of the where money is spent in New Zealand at this point of time, I'm in a position because of our, you know, money situation, I guess, to say, okay, even though it's annoying having to pay that amount of money to a private hospital and for private drugs, I can still do it. I can feel annoyed and grumpy about it, but I don't have to choose between that and selling my house. And I'm deeply sympathetic, I might add, for people who, you know, are in that position because I've got a friend who is, and also, you know other people who just don't have that choice. The problem is, realistically, most of us go through life going, that'll never happen to me, right? I mean, I was running, cycling. I'd worked in a health field. I was often teaching about diabetes, for example, and so forth. So if anybody, you know, in terms of the risk factors, which are commonly touted with cancer, then I wasn't one of those. But there you go. That happens, you know. So I guess my suggestion to people is it's not like you want to dwell on all the bad stuff that can happen, but it's kind of handy to vaguely just make the, you know, think about, well, what have happened to me? You know, the ability to have a bit of financial buffer meant that it wasn't like, okay, well, we've got to go and live in a tent.
Yeah.
Having said that, I'll tell you a quick antidote. I did think about some surgery in Australia, quoted that if I had the surgery in Australia, it would be between $350,000 or $400,000, which is a significant amount of coin for pretty much anybody. So when my partner got home, I kind of said to him, hey, how do you feel about living in a tent? You know, no maintenance. Because, I mean, there's a difference between that and completely wiping your money out for, you know, some experimental surgery that you have in America, which might cost you $1 million. And you think, wow, that's a, you know. So, I mean, it's I'm again making those choices, but it's there's a bar at which clearly my, you know, ability to make those choices is helped, you know, helped by our financial situation. Mm.
Isn't it kind of crazy, though, that it's like, you know, your health is everything and you're having to sort of weigh up these financial choices as part of it. I mean, yeah, I know that that's reality. I know that that's life. But it's fairly confronting, I imagine, to come face to face with that. Did it feel confronting?
Look, I've been down the confronting role more when I've had a couple of times during the last 3 years, look, if you don't do X, you'll be lucky if you live till Christmas type of thing, you know? And I'm still here. And I think part of the reason I'm so well in chatting to you, and I've already been out this morning and looked at lamb, you know, to see if there were early lambs, and I'm going to take the dog for a walk, and I've got gardening to do, and blah, 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 is I have enough energy to do that because the treatment that I'm on at the moment, which I'm paying for privately, is easy, right? If I wasn't, I know that I'd have to be back on this other thing, which worked effectively for me, is fully publicly funded, that you're basically going into the hospital and you go in feeling great and you come out feeling like you've got the flu and jet lag and you can't go to sleep because you have to take steroids to be able to tolerate the drug. Now, again, part of this is my natural ability to tolerate it. I mean, this is an individual response to therapy, if you like. But it's also handy to be able to afford that individual response to the therapy that means that while I might have small amounts of side effects, you know, which are not nearly as bad as ones I've had before or indeed other people have, where you lose your hair or, you know, you're continually awake at night and you feel nauseous and you have no energy. I mean, yeah, I mean, I've certainly 2 years ago, been down the, you know, had some other chemotherapy that I remember on Matariki, we were trying to pick up firewood logs and I was literally staggering around the house going, the farm, kind of the little farm that we've got, thinking, I can't even open a gate. I have no energy. So again, bringing it back to the financial aspect of that, it was about choice and the ability to have even consider other options. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how much you're comfortable saying, and please only say what you're comfortable saying, right? It's super personal. But, you know, in terms of, is this going to end up being a long-term thing where you end up paying for this treatment for quite a while? And is it, you know, what sort of ballpark are we talking? Are we talking tens of thousands of dollars?
Yes. Over a year, I'll be spending about $25,000 on treatment. Well, that's a really good question. And the tricky thing about it is that you want to spend your money to stay alive, but then again, how long do you do? So, I mean, look, with anybody will know that somebody who has stage four cancer is not necessarily going to worry about their 100th birthday, right? So, I mean, I'm probably, to be brutal, make a few black humour jokes that I'm not necessarily going to have to worry about what rest home I am in when I'm 85. And I mean, somebody said, oh, you know, it's a case of being positive. And it is. And I'm probably one of the most resilient people I know with cancer. But look, so the financial impact is significant. I can't really answer that because the problem will be, it's not just the when do I want to stop spending that money? It's more when will that therapy stop working, right? So that's the question, not, okay, I'm going to pay for this for 5 years and then I'm going to stop. So I don't know that yet. And I haven't had to make that decision either health-wise nor finance-wise. So while it's good, it's good. But, you know, never say never.
Yeah, yeah. And it's such an unpredictable thing, I'm sure, as well. Hey, what does it mean for the rest of your life? Because when you're saying about making the black humor jokes, that's also how I cope with things. So I really identify. You know, how does it impact on the rest of your life in terms of, are there certain things you want to make sure you do get to do, especially with your family? You know, are there any plans like that? Is that also sort of where you're directing your money at the moment?
I did pay for some surgery last year in overseas, and I had to pay for that. Look, I don't have the perfect answer either. I mean, I struggle between, oh my God, I've got to do this and this and this while I'm well, versus, well, life is almost back to normal because you feel good. I've got two other close friends with cancer and they would probably feel the same way, that you want to do stuff while you're well, while you can, but equally you don't want to just spend your life doing the highlights because that isn't really how life is. In terms of the impact of my family, I have some siblings over in Australia and interestingly enough, I think in the beginning they raced over here quite a lot, kind of probably, oh my God, she's going to pig out, you know, but now it's kind of eased off a little bit. But the other thing, I'm a little bit more direct, I suppose, about people trying to, and my son was probably one of the people who would roll his eyes in the way that this happens, is to try and think about sorting yourself out reasonably early so that you can know, you know, or have a degree of education about options in the future. So, for example, one of those is compounding interest, right? Both positive and negative, obviously. If you have a debt and it is compounding over a credit card, for example, that somebody hasn't paid, that can have a significant effect. Equally, of course, then there's the other side that, in, you know, in a compounding interest situation for, say, a bank deposit or, you know, for money that you've got invested in shares and stuff. So probably pushed my son and others to think about stuff like that. Now, I can't make them do it, much to my annoyance, but, you know, at least you've got enough that you can kind of say, hey, think about this and what about that? There's a whole bunch of stuff out here now, your podcasts, those type of things are really good. Once people get down there, and I'm actually, as an aside, doing the Rebel Finance School at the moment, and it's quite gratifying to know that you kind of go, oh, yeah, look, most of this I understand, you know. But again, 20 years back, wouldn't have had any idea about it.
Yeah, oh, I love the Rebel Finance guys. I think they do such good work. I missed them while they were going around New Zealand. I was deep in, my baby was still very young then, so I wasn't really leaving, going anywhere. But hopefully they come back to New Zealand soon because I think they do great work.
Yeah, and I missed them because I was busy trying to stay alive by being in Germany having surgery. So, you know, it swings and roundabouts.
Priorities. What can you do?
Yeah, what can you do?
Life looks different for everyone. Maybe you're buying your first home, growing your whānau, dreaming of travel, or simply trying to stay on top of things. KiwiBank has the tools to help you manage your money your way. Find out more at kiwibank.co.nz. This is making Kiwi better off. This is Kiwi.
To be able to prioritize, as you say, your health, feeling good through treatment, being able to have these options for the surgeries, I feel like this is the number one thing that I would be building financial independence for. So I'd love to dig into some of those tactics now that you've used. You've mentioned that you really prioritize being frugal and making those lifestyle choices. What about from there? I mean, you invest, what sort of things?
I think the thing about being frugal is sometimes thinking about value, like I said. So, I mean, sometimes, you know, the classic thing is that, you know, it's a pair of boots that you buy that you know you're going to use over and over and over, or a really good hike. Like, I do quite a bit of tramping. So, I mean, you know, there's absolutely no fun being at the top of a mountain or on a tramping track and going, shit, I wish I'd spent $50 more on a jacket that actually keeps me dry as opposed to this budget one that I've got and now I'm wet. You know, so there's the thing about that value, but
value not cheap.
Yeah, value not cheap is a huge thing. It's fair to say as a caveat that my partner probably could live in the said tent. So I've been the one who have pushed things financially and I've told him several times about where things are, but he's pretty disinterested, quite frankly. Property is so overwhelmingly a big thing in New Zealand. And I think there are times that it has been really, really good. And in terms of both cash flow for rentals and in, you know, capital gains, etc. However, I chose fairly deliberately not, even when we had extra money, not to invest in property, because this might sound a bit weird, but my view of a good society is one where housing is a human right. But in terms of investing, index funds, of course, because, and why do I say of course? Because if you've, anybody who's probably looking at the whole financial independence movement is thinking about diversity in their strategy. I think now on reflection, I've certainly made mistakes along the way. I mean, you get emotionally committed to a share as a classic thing. You know, oh, well, it's gone down and blah, 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 and I don't want to sell it because I'm crystallizing my losses. However, one really, 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 really important thing to do is when things go tits up, to not go, okay, my God, I'm going to sell immediately. And I'll give you an example of that. So we put some money into Fisher Funds, and that was Australian Aggressive Fund or something. So that's actually a managed fund in Australia. So the diversity, yes, fund, yes. When I bought it, it immediately within 2 months, that initial investment dropped by about 40%, right? So that's not awesome because you kind of go, damn, ooh. But the point about it is not to lose your nerve. You just have to go, okay, this is a share market. If you look at that over a period of time, if you look at all the trends, you know, yes, there's going to be major things through the kind of, you know, like the depression, the global financial crisis and the kind of Iranian oil shocks and various other times in history. But sooner or later, if you look at the graph over a long period of time, the volatility is there in terms of price, but you know, it does tend to arguably do better. Some of the basic principles, I think, are if you have enough, if you're trying to not draw on your assets when they're down, then it's a good idea to have a cash buffer. So I think we've arguably got about 2 or 3 years in cash. Bearing in mind, because part of that is higher, because I'm paying for immunotherapy drugs, which is, like I've said, is not a pleasure. But that would be one thing. The other thing is thinking about that within that diversity of some stuff is more, even for my age, which is clearly not a 20-year-old, We've still got some stuff in aggressive funds, because my view is that's going to be 10 years, you know, the whole volatility type of thing. And then with my KiwiSaver, for example, I mean, technically, if I, at my age, reaching the retirement age, notwithstanding the fact that I'm not working at the moment, I should technically have mine in a balanced fund. But the thing about it is I'm not necessarily looking to use it in 5 years' time. Right. So, I mean, that's why I'm prepared to have a more of aggressive kind of some of the portfolio, more aggressive stuff. And I think one of the things I've picked up from a Rebel Finance School, and I would encourage people to listen to that, is that you can still keep that as part of your portfolio. So what I did was, even though we weren't earning much after that initial foreign Fisher funds, I've kept putting bits of money in as could be afforded.
Yeah. It's funny that, isn't it? Because that's something I come across when I talk to people as well, because we talk about the importance of diversification all the time, which for anyone who hasn't come across that yet, that's just don't have all your eggs in one basket. If you put all of your money into shares in one company, super risky, because even the biggest, best company is going to have some bolt of lightning hit them.
Yeah, look at Tesla.
Exactly.
I mean, Tesla is a prime example of everybody was like, oh, buy Tesla shares, they got, you know, two years, there was 40% or whatever it was. And then all of a sudden it's like, oops, you know, not favorite at all. So, I mean, that's the thing about diversity, not only a share class, like, you know, you might think, okay, well, I have diversified because I've got three different technology companies, but equally, what about, you know, the whole idea about diversity is to have different assets, different countries, potentially, if you're able to, and the best or one of the easiest way to get exposure to that is through things like Simplicity Global Funds or whatever, that ilk of stuff, that type of thing. Yeah.
A good fund is still the core of my own investing strategy as well. It just makes it so easy. Why would you spend more brain power when you have this amazing thing right there doing it for you, you know?
Yeah, but it took a wee while personally for me to get to that brain power. For somebody, once they get to the point that they're trying to draw money down, and if they don't want to draw it down from cash, is you can also, I mean, you can regularly sell a part of your portfolio. So say, for example, $300,000 in a managed fund and they need $400 a week. Well, you can actually set it up that you can take that, that you don't need to have the separate cash. It's just been that I've kind of kept it like that because that's possibly a philosophy, for example, for the likes of Mary Holm, who's obviously a New Zealand financial writer, is that laddering term deposits. So I've chosen to do that kind of thing, but also have this other stuff over here that if we wanted to, we could grab some bits of income out of that on a regular basis, and you just sell down your portfolio.
Nice little drip feed out. It's so good. Makes life a lot easier. And like you say, that's a huge bonus of shares, stocks, funds over property. I mean, property might, depending on how many you have, you might be able to use the rental income like that, but it's super dependent on how it's set up. Shares, it's very easy to do. I mean, this also is a slightly delicate question. So again, let me know what you're comfortable saying. Is there also an aspect as your, who knows where your health journey will go, right? But also, I feel like so many of us just take for granted. I mean, I could be hit by a bus tomorrow. You know, none of us really know how long we've got. Is there an aspect as well, while you're looking at your finances and you're paying for your treatment, is there also an aspect of trying to set things up with an eye to how your family does once you are gone, whenever that happens?
I guess the position that I can do best with them at the moment is try and bang on to them about their own finances. So it's not giving them a fish necessarily right now, because I kind of want to, you know, keep myself alive, but also reminding them while they're in that peak earning time, which they all are, just to think about, you know, financial literacy is a huge thing. My God, it is such a huge thing. Because I think what I did is you had the siege mentality. You go, right, I need to do work hard and I need to do this and I need to do that for this day. But mine's just come a bit earlier because of this health situation. Thankfully, I had put us in that position, because otherwise, you know, I probably expected that I was going to work through to 65 like most people, just because, you know, I might take periods, longer periods of time off, or be able to take longer periods of time off because, you know, to go for 6 weeks to Europe or whatever, because we had that financial buffer. But nevertheless, I thought I'd probably be employed. I'm possibly not at the point yet where I'm thinking about I'm going to rush out and buy everybody a Lamborghini. I mean, I don't know how helpful that would be to family members, you know, because I personally don't think it would be.
Oh, I honestly, I've said this before, and I'm not being glib because I know how important that, you know, actual cash money is to people. But if I had to choose between talking to my kid about money and giving them that financial education versus giving them a whole bunch of money and we've never talked about it before, I would pick talking to them about it every time, because actually dropping a stack of cash on someone when they don't know how to deal with it can destroy lives. And I'm so serious about that, you know?
Look, but you're not always successful 100% of the time. I mean, I think the thing about it is that I do become a bit of an evangelist about just thinking like this is about living deliberately in a whole bunch of different ways, though. And that's a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a catchphrase, living deliberately. But even with a couple of younger friends of mine, it's like, think about where you're spending your money. Have you got an emergency thing that you've set up for yourself? How could you maximize your income and create a gap that you can actually get to that at this age without going, oh no, I deserve to have 4 days off in a row or whatever. And I mean, part of that is probably a little bit of a recognition in life that you have periods of time where you do have more energy. And that tends to be not necessarily in your 60s, you know. So I mean, I'm where I am at the moment, and I mean, I'm not, it just doesn't, I consider myself, most of my friends would, a very energetic person. But, you know, it's not there as much as it was. And the only point of that is getting back to our original thing, the point of work, unless you intrinsically enjoy it, and there's a whole bunch, but one of the aspects is providing financial things. Yep, sure, there's the social aspects of work and the kind of feeling of contribution and all of those other things as well. But if we're dealing only with the financial thing, it's a handy time to be able to create that gap between what you spend, what you bring in, and then think, okay, now I've got something that I can invest for the future in case whatever happens that you'd never ever think is going to happen happens to you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, on that, I mean, maybe that is the advice, but you know, if there was one bit of advice that you wanted people to take away from this, if they're looking to create that financial independence, they may be starting from the beginning, what do you think has been the biggest thing that's helped you that you think other people should embrace?
I think, well, there's probably, I'm never going to give you a short answer. I think the idea about I deserve this, right? And the, you know, I deserve a really nice car, but I can't afford it. So therefore, I'm going to buy it on car finance, which is actually going to cost me a hell of a lot. Think about the thing that I might provide me gratification if I buy it tomorrow. But if I can't afford to pay cash for it, what's the value of that? And what's the choice that I'm making against my future me that means that I might have that set aside that I can then go, okay, look, I can choose not to work like I'm doing. I can choose to do volunteer work. I can go down and see family in the South Island or whatever. Is the money reward that you think you'll need actually giving you a benefit? Or really, if you think about it, is it just taking away from future choices? The other thing, like I said, is just as much reading and education as you possibly can. Knowledge is power. It absolutely is power.
No, hey, I think you've given us some great advice to follow there. And I also think, I just want to say as well, thank you for being so generous and sharing your personal story, because it is a real wake-up call for people. I mean, I always bang on about you can use money to build this quality of life, to build choices. But I think you are such an example of you get this horrible thing happen to you and you can make choices that give you so much more quality of life because you've made other financial choices beforehand. And bolt from the blue, nobody knows when this stuff is coming, but being able to make choices when something awful happens like this, I can't think of anything I'd rather use my money on. So thank you so much for sharing about that. All right, that was Carolyn Gordon, and of course, an amazing personal story. If this has helped inspire you with your money, send it on to a friend as well, because I think this is exactly the sort of stuff that is life-changing. But until next time, have a great day.
Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.